Good Gabs, sponsored by SkillSkin, a nonprofit organization empowering individuals with disabilities through employment. Rarely do you have some of your favorites on the podcast, but man, we've met a lot of people over the last couple of years. But today, this is one of my faves. This is Rob McCann, the CEO of Catholic Charities of Eastern Washington, making magic happen, making impact happen. We're going to hear some good stories today. So Rob, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Rob, thanks for joining us.
Well, that's quite an introduction. I don't think I'll live up to that, but it's great to be here.
Well, what's happening in the world of Catholic Charities these days?
You know, it's never a dull moment. This is actually 2 weeks ago was my 24th year anniversary being at Catholic Charities, which
wow.
is crazy. It's way too long. I need to be gone at some point here.
You blinked.
I blinked and it happened, but...
Congratulations, by
yeah,
the way. That's
you know what
hell of a legacy.
The IT department put together a little thing saying, hey, Rob, did you know when you started at Catholic Charities, we had 41 employees. We have 511 now. When you started at Catholic Charities, we had a $3 million a year budget. We're at $60 million now. When I started, we had 9 apartment complexes. We have 67 now. And we have 4 construction sites, as you know, just this year. So it's a lot of growth. And really the great thing about Catholic Charities is we cover a huge area, all 13 counties of Eastern Washington. So the Canadian border, the Oregon border, everything in between.
So just east of the Cascades. That's
yeah,
us.
Just the east side of the state is all us and, serve about 60,000 different people a year. So if you come have lunch at the House of Charity every day, all year long, you only got counted once in that 60,000. But you know,
wow.
15 different programs that most people have never heard about because the only thing people know about Catholic Charities is homelessness or housing. And, you know, that's good and it's bad, right? It's the reality of intergenerational poverty is it's so much more complex than just homelessness or even housing.
Absolutely.
You know, and we have programs in maternity support, counseling, senior services, substance abuse, mental health, food for all, emergency assistance, immigration legal services, and even my own donors couldn't name any of those probably.
Right.
But they know about the House of Charity, and they know about the Havens and homelessness and housing. And that's just the world we live in now. But, you know, for Catholic Charities, you know, aside from the specifics of it, the overarching thing is so super simple. We believe every human being is made in the image and likeness of God. And if you believe that, then every human being deserves dignity, respect, and unconditional love. Hard stop. And that's us.
Pretty easy to get behind.
Yeah, and the great thing is we don't care who God is. It could be Christ, Yahweh, Buddha, Allah. Does not matter. We love everybody. You know, it doesn't matter what country you're from, whether you're documented or undocumented. It doesn't matter your gender, your age. It doesn't matter your sexual orientation. We love you. We're going to serve you. And you wouldn't think that that's very controversial. That's
right.
We learned that in kindergarten, right?
Yeah.
But it's incredibly controversial that we serve those people. You know, and everyone's got their own definition of those people.
It's true.
They don't deserve it. They haven't earned it. Why are you serving them? You know, they're different. They're not appropriate. We call BS on that. We serve every, if you're a human being, we're going to love you. We're going to serve you. And it shouldn't be controversial, but it is. You wouldn't believe the letters and the phone calls I get from people saying, well, you shouldn't serve that one or that person because of this or that or the next thing.
How does that feel when those letters come? Because, I mean,
ridiculous.
It's got to have a reaction,
it's,
right?
It's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, I'm a New York City hockey player. I have a very instant reaction to those letters. And it's not very Christian, quite frankly. But, you know, it shouldn't be controversial.
Yeah.
But you'd be amazed the number of Catholics who tell me all the people I shouldn't serve. And I tell them to pound sand the same way I would anyone else, because we're going to love everyone. We're going to serve everyone. Because that is the model of Christ. And it's also the model of Christ that if you're of a different faith tradition, that's okay too. We love you too. You're a human being. But you know, the last couple years, this has been a thing we talk about. I would have never guessed that. Most of my career, I call this the grocery store algorithm.
Okay, tell us more.
So
yeah.
I do all the cooking and the grocery shopping in my house. I have for all the 21 years of my marriage. And so I'm in the grocery store a lot. I'm also on TV and on the front page of the paper a lot. So people
know
who I am.
Yeah, you're visible.
And I don't ever go to the grocery store without somebody over these last 24 years coming up to me, almost every time. And for most of those 24 years, I'd say 18 or 19 of those 24 years, 10 out of 10 people thank you. God bless you. You're doing great work. I'm praying for you. Regular stuff. Like, yeah, like I like
fills the cup,
pump the tires. Right. Yeah. That's great stuff. In the last couple years, that's changed. So the good news is 9 out of 10 people still say, thank you. God bless you. 1 out of 10 now screams the F word at me in the produce section.
Man. It
tells me I'm ruining Spokane and you shouldn't serve those people or that person because of this or that or the next thing. And you know, it's different. Like that's a new thing. That's where our country is right now. It's where our community is. It's different and new. It makes me sad.
Definitely.
But it also makes me want to just dig in more. Like, come get it. You know, the buffet is open and I'm going to serve all the time. And for that 1 out of 10 that screams the F word at me in the grocery store, I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to try and talk it out with you. And most of the time, they are not going to listen to a word I'm going to say.
They made up their mind.
And that's okay, too, because you know what? I love that guy, too. You know, and that's the toughest part, right? Because the hockey player, New Yorker in me does not want to love that guy. But I got to, if I'm going to walk the talk, you got to find a way. You know, the big thing that I love about cafeterias is preach the gospel, use words only when absolutely necessary. And most of the time it's not necessary, you know, and for
actions,
for that small group of people in our community that are mad or angry at the poor or afraid of the poor or want to vilify or criminalize them or get, you know, I'm mad at anyone who dares to serve the poor because they haven't earned it. They don't deserve it. I pray for them. The good news is the overwhelming majority of Spokane is not that 1 out of 10.
Well, it's, and that's very great generous to hear. Cause yeah, like I love this community and we're trying to like move the needle on all sorts of things. And I mean, these are community problems. So we talked about it a little bit. It's like it's happening all over the country. Mm-hmm. We're doing something about it here in Spokane. And Catholic Charities is just one agency that is, you know, really working hard, but it happens to be one of the most impactful too in so many different ways. Yeah. I was telling my wife that we were doing this interview today and her first husband was a legal immigrant from Uruguay. They utilize Catholic Charities services to, you know, go through that citizenship process. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I never, ever could have done this without it. It changed a whole family's world because, you know, then other people were able to, you know, come here and really prosper. Mm-hmm. And it was because of those services that were available. And that's one little thing. So, by the way, so Kathy says thanks.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean,
though the marriage didn't work out, and I'm thanks, Kathy.
Yeah. You know, the reality is, unless you're a Native American, we're all immigrants.
True.
We all came from immigrants in this country. And that would be a shock and a surprise to a lot of people around here, but it's true. And you know, the reality is we're all vulnerable at some point in our lives. We all feel alone or isolated. We all feel some kind of poverty. Maybe it's not material poverty or financial poverty, but it's poverty of spirit or poverty of relationship. We all have felt chaos in our lives and crisis. And you know, most of us have these great support systems, family, friends, you know, coworkers. And if you're stuck in intergenerational poverty, you do not have those things.
It's true.
And so that's where we come in. You know, our thing for over 100 years has been, we're going to do the work that no one else is willing or able to do. If you look at the history of our programs, we started them because no one else was doing that.
There's a real need and you just had to fill the need.
Yeah. House of Charity in the 1950s, no one was serving anyone in any condition who was homeless, low barrier shelter. No one was doing that. So we said, yeah, we'll do it because no one else can do it. And we've done that all these years at House of Charity. It's become a lightning rod of controversy now. But here's the good news. Now, in the last 4 years, there are, even when I rebuilt the House of Charity my first year I was here.
24 years ago.
In the spot where the city told us to put it, because that neighborhood was completely blighted and abandoned. And now it's the University District.
Right.
Which is great, right? And so people are like, well, I don't know if we want the House of Charity there anymore. But we look at that a different way and say, you know, even when we built it 24 years ago, there was still no one willing or able to do the work for those people, the toughest of the tough. The only other people in Spokane that would take anyone in any condition, hospital and the jail, and that's it, and us.
Man.
And so we built it there. Now, in the last couple of years, there are these wonderful other nonprofits that are willing and able to do low barrier shelter. And so we've been looking at that for 2 years saying, you know, maybe it's okay if we hand this off to some other people because now there are other people. And what's the next thing that no one is willing or able to do? And for us, it's probably going to be things like senior homeless specifically because they're the most vulnerable to the homeless population. Homeless people who are dying.
Yeah.
You know, you and I can go to hospice house. Homeless person Action Can't, we're going to set that up. And medically fragile homeless people. Maybe that'll be our next niche.
I got goosebumps when I heard this idea of, you know, homeless hospice.
Yeah.
I never thought of that before. When you said that in the board meeting yesterday, I was like, what? It really shook me to the core. I was like, wow, that is a real need.
We, yeah, for incredible. Decades, we have guys who pass away in their beds, in the house of charity, in their sleep, or overnight. It happens regularly. And that's not how you or I would want to pass away. You want to pass away with your loved ones around you in a safe, comfortable, quiet, serene space.
Yeah.
Whether it's hospice house or whether it's your own home. And so we're going to build little mini hospice rooms in whatever we do next. And I don't know what we're going to do next or, and you know, spoiler alert, yeah, I'm sure. I don't know where, and I wouldn't tell you if I didn't know,
but these are the big ideas, right? Yeah, and that's the genesis ideas. Of Catholic Charities, yeah. Like see a need, fill a need.
Yeah.
I know it just, the work that our organizations are doing together is like, you know, helping people living in low-income housing that are living with a disability,
want
to get into the workforce. Yeah. It's like we're pairing these things together. Yeah. That hasn't happened around the country before. So see a need, fill a need.
And
it's just so awesome.
It's no one else is willing or able to do what you guys are doing, what we're doing together now. And that's evident because when we competed against 160 other Catholic charities in the country for what's the best new innovative idea, we won.
By the way, listeners, this is one of the most proudest moments of my professional career. We won.
$600,000 prize to get this program off the ground. We beat 159 other Catholic charities all over the U.S. for the best new innovative idea because no one is willing or able to do what you guys are doing with us now.
And our pilot's working, too. Yeah. Dana Devine, our executive producer, she's been integral in that project. We just hired another person just at our last event, too. So it's just now it's becoming a thing. We're going to have to create more jobs so we can help more people.
Here's the good news. We have like 35 open positions at Catholic Charities. And if you look at the last 3 years where it's hard to get anyone to work, the biggest pool of new hires at Catholic Charities has been what we call lived experience staff. People who have been homeless, who have been suffering with addiction and mental health, who have been in crisis. We say, come work for us. We now have people who were in our shelters who are now directors of Catholic Charities programs. And that's the beauty of this.
What a circle.
Yeah. And we can pull that off. Now, does it work every time? No. Lots of time a lived experience staff person might have a struggle, might have a relapse, might have a bad day. We work with them. But when they do work, and they work the majority of time, it's beautiful. Because there's no better person to relate to our population than people who have been there, done that.
True.
And, you know, we're kind of getting away from hiring, my HR director will kill me when she hears it. We're getting away from hiring the master's degree social worker people because you got to spend the first 2 years deprogramming them from everything they just learned because the real world's different. And what we find is someone who slept in a bed at house charity for 10 years and now works for us, he gets it a lot quicker than that master's student.
It's true. We at SkillSkin, you know, we did the same thing for a long time as hired, you know, a pedigreed person to run operations that are very close to people with disabilities. And we kind of failed a lot at that. And when we started to like work with people who just like care about the mission, care about the people, have the ability to like learn and invite them into the workforce and this mission oriented work, like we saw a lot more success that way. So I'm happy to hear you're experimenting in this way too. It's like, we're just trying to do good, right?
Yeah. Fast forward 5 years from now, we'll do this podcast again. And I guarantee you people that have come out of your program and lived in our housing are now working for us. I guarantee it. And it's not going to be a small number. It's going to be a big number because it already is a big number.
I love it. Well, okay, let's talk about big numbers. I mean, that was shocking, 3 million to 60 million over 24 years. How do you lead through that kind of massive amount of change?
It's dangerous. There is another word for uncontrolled growth. It's called cancer. you got to be careful of that because you grow this much. Because our thing is anyone who asks us to do something, we say yes, which is really good, but also really sketchy if you're not careful because you can get over your skis super fast. And, we want to say yes to serving new people and someone will bring us something and say, hey, no one is helping this group. Can you do it? We're going to find 10 ways to Jesus that we can say yes to that. And my CFO is going, Rob, stop. my HR director's like, you got to be kidding me. Like we got 30 open jobs right now, but you got to be really careful to lead through that.
Mm-hmm.
And what my leadership model has been for many, many years is pretty simple. Hire brilliant people and stay the hell out of their way.
That's the key.
You know, because if you get the right people, you know, making the right decisions and running their own kitchens and shows and whatever. And the worst thing I can do is micromanage that. You know, I'll go raise money. I'll go shake hands or sign thank you letters and strategic stuff. But hire brilliant people and then get out of their way. Let them cook. You know, that's the way to do it. And that model has worked for us, which means that if you're a leader, if you're me, you got to be willing to sit in a room with your senior leaders and have them go, Rob, you're crazy. That's a bad idea. And yeah, be okay with that. And, you know, that team has talked me out of so many terrible ideas over the years. And thank God they did.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and because I come up
creating an environment
I come
where
up
you can
with
10
ideas a week, and seven of them will be pretty good, and three of them will be absolute dumpster fires. And someone better talk me out of the dumpster fires, or else we're going to burn. And you got to have people that are willing to do that. And you got to have a CEO who's willing to say, yeah, I'll back off of that one. That's crazy.
Yeah, help create that environment where that's okay. And, you know, you're
discuss
not punished.
The undiscussables. Yeah. That's the rule in our leadership team. It's very simple.
I like it. We call it just put it on the table. Yeah. That's our version of that. That's incredible. Well, what are you dreaming about then these days? Like,
you know, obviously the big thing we're working a lot on, as you know, is housing. You know, the reality
such a
is,
need. It's insane.
Yeah. I mean, you look at what rents have gone to in our community in the last 4 years. You look at the fact that if you're struggling with intergenerational poverty, whether it's mental health or addiction or economic inequality or lack of childcare, lack of transportation, lack of employment, those things are fixable, but it's really hard to fix that with anyone if they don't know where they're sleeping tonight.
Yep.
Or where they're sleeping next month because they can't make rent this month. And so housing has become kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You got to start with a front door and a key. And even with a chronically street homeless person, you can't really talk to them about, let's talk about treatment. Let's talk about getting on your meds for mental health. Let's talk about all these ways you can be healthier until you've got a place to sleep. You know, and maybe I'll sleep under a bridge tonight. Maybe I'll sleep in my car in a Walmart parking lot. Maybe I'll get a bed at a shelter. Maybe I'll have an apartment, you know, one of the havens. And until you get them into a safe space, it's really hard to do all the other things they need to have done. And so whether it's families or single adults, you got to start with housing. And so we've really focused on that over the years.
And I'm proud to be associated with that. And I don't know, even when I'm talking with my friends, some people, it's like, they don't understand sometimes. Like, oh, why don't you just get a job? It's like, well, no, there's some other points. Like, we're start with housing, work on case management. And then it's like, then folks like Skillskin, we're going to get involved and help people, you know, change a path in their life. Some people just may not ever, and that's okay.
That has to be okay.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the stereotype is, well, gosh, all these poor people or homeless people or whoever, they just need to get a job. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's the American way, right? You know, just figure it out.
Silly.
Make better choices. You know, I have two teenagers. I tell them to make better choices all the time. They don't listen to me. You know, the reality is not everyone is able to make those choices, especially when you grew up and experienced childhood trauma and adolescent trauma and teen trauma because of intergenerational poverty in your home, in your parents' home, in your grandparents' home, in your great-grandparents' home. And then, you know, it's harder to function through that. You need some help. There are some people that move into our beds that may never work. It's not a big number. Most of our people desperately want to work. I mean,
they do.
The dignity of work is a big part of loving a human being. And most of our folks want to work, and some can and some can't. Some, their mental health is so acute, their issues are so acute that just getting through another day in a safe space, in a way that seems happy and healthy is a major victory. And you know, the reality is that for us is we want people to have that dignity. You know, we want people to eat, sleep, and go to the bathroom indoors. We want them to know they're loved. In our housing, you know, we call it, you've heard this in the board meeting a million times, the precious presence.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can't just give someone a key to an apartment and say, hey, good luck. We have an army of staff in every building whose only job it is to know their names and know how they're doing every day of the week. You know, people whose job it is to say to those 50 residents in that haven, how you doing today? you know, and
yeah,
you
feel know, some love, feel supported.
Exactly. When I've talked to people who move into our housing from the streets, and I talk to them years later, I say, tell me, like, what was the biggest thing that made a difference? It's never that, oh, I had a bed or a key or meals. It's never those things. Every time it's the same thing. It's people will tell you some version of this. The fact, what changed my life is that I lived in a place for the first time in my life that somebody knew my name and asked me every day how I was doing and then stood there and let me answer the question. So imagine that. If you grow up never having anyone say, hey, how you doing today? And then let you answer. And
like never been seen,
never been identified. Yeah. And that that's the precious presence. And we bring in staff on site. We bring in all kinds of staff. We bring in healthcare, mental health, substance abuse counselors, security, property managers, maintenance, life skills, case managers. Because, you know, if you've been living on the streets your whole life, you don't know how to do laundry. Maybe you don't know that.
Yeah. Something I might take for granted.
Deli food. You don't know how to clean a bathroom. We're going to show you. And so we have this army of staff, and you know, lately now we brought in the really big guns. We brought in the retired nuns.
Oh, yeah, snap. Baby.
Come on. Yeah. An 80-year-old sister who comes and bakes cookies in the kitchen downstairs and then goes door to door, knock, knock, knock. Who's going to say no to a nun with a cookie? Nobody.
Not me.
Nobody. But you know what sister's really doing? She's checking in on them. Have you showered? Have you changed your clothes in the last few days? Are you hoarding? Do you have 27 bikes in your apartment? How are you doing? And if someone says, I don't want the cookie, and slams the door, she goes downstairs and talks to the case manager. Hey, go check on Joe in 202. He might be having a rough time. And then we go check on him. And so that way he doesn't go back to the streets or to the shelter or to jail. You know, in our Haven properties, which get me the most controversy, the most hate in the community, those properties, we have a 93% success rate, which is a HUD definition, which means 93% of the time you move in from chronic street homelessness to one of our units, 2 years later, you are still in that stable housing. You've not gone back to jail, to prison, or to the streets or shelter.
Pretty good outcome. And so where's the hate coming from then?
The hate comes because people often don't talk about the 93%. You know what they want to talk about? The 7%. Because when our people fail, they fail spectacularly. And it's on the front page of the paper. It involves the fire department, the police department, and a SWAT team. And so that's all people see. When they drive by the Havens, they don't see this beautiful building that is, as you've seen, is impeccably clean inside.
Yes,
people
well
love
maintained.
Living there, well maintained. They see the 20 kind of scary looking people who are hanging out in front of the building.
Who may not even be residents.
They're not residents.
That was something that I learned.
They're not residents. They are people that are trying to sneak in, get in. We
prey
on our residents, sell them something, traffic them. They're the people you see sitting in front of our buildings that are smoking blue Mexi fentanyl pills right in front of the building. They're the drug dealers. There's this criminal element that is a very small embedded part of the homeless population, but they hang out in our areas in front of our buildings because on the first of the month, the 50 people in that building are going to get a check for a couple $100. And they know that that's the week of the month that I could sell them something, I can talk them into something, or I can rob them. And that's the reality. And so these throngs of people you see in front of our buildings, that 25,000 cars drive by every day, and they see beautiful building, Catholic Charities logo, super scary people on the sidewalk, and then they drive away going, well, that's a shit show, right? And the media writes about it, and the neighbors are like, look at this. This is awful. There's litter. There's human feces. There's syringes. And there are, even though we clean it 5, 6, 7 times a day. But this group of people needs to be engaged in a different way.
Right.
We go out to them every day and say, would you like to come into the House of Charity and get a meal and a bed and let's talk? And they say, absolutely not. I'm staying right here because I know Joey on the third floor. You know. And meanwhile, Joey's in his apartment going, I'm afraid to go out of my own building because that guy's out there. And so it becomes an issue.
We heard that at one of our hiring events, actually. It's like, that was as real could be, like people.
But that becomes the perception. The 7% becomes the norm, becomes the narrative, and it's not accurate. But it's really hard to explain that to people where they believe it or agree with it. But it is the reality. And it's a tough one because it leads to the entire homeless population, the entire working poor, low-income, ultra-low-income population of Spokane being vilified and criminalized on a very massive scale.
True statement. Well, how do we challenge, you know, people's perception and maybe even inspire to care a little more?
You know, I think you have to tap into...
What's the recipe?
You tap into what everyone has, which is everyone's better angels. we learn as kindergartners, we're supposed to love our neighbor. And if you've got two sandwiches, you share with the kid next to you who doesn't have any. We forget that as adults, right? We let political ideology or personal feelings get in the way, and then it leads to fear and anger and hate of those people, right? Mm-hmm. And you got to tap back into those better angels, into people's heart and soul. The good news is most of Spokane is already there. The minority of people that come at me at the grocery store or write awful things in the newspaper in op-eds, that is a minority group. But here's the thing about minority groups in our world these days. They are highly vocal. They're highly well-organized.
Yep.
And they're very effective. And a small group of people can make the rest of the public, by using media and social media and things like podcasts, they can use those devices to make them seem like they are the majority.
And experts.
They're 30 people. You know, yeah. And we see this every neighborhood we are going to propose to build in. The neighborhood will typically 10 or 12 or 15 people will get together, and they will start a Facebook group. They'll go to city council every Monday night. They'll sue us. They'll try and stop us. They do not speak for the other 3,000 people who live in that neighborhood.
No, they don't.
And in fact, what we typically see is eventually the other 3,000 people start reaching out to us and go, you know, they don't speak for us. But you got to weather through that, and it's really hard to weather through that, because that one out of ten in the grocery store, I remember that much more than I remember the nine who said thank you.
I'm sure you do.
I wish I didn't, but I do. I mean, that's
you are human.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're a tough New Yorker. That's for sure. How the heck did you get to Spokane?
You know, it's a ridiculously happy accident. I was working overseas with Catholic Relief Services. I was in, I don't know, 35 countries in 5 years doing program evaluation, refugee camps, you know, all the major things in the 90s, Rwanda, Bosnia, Kosovo, Cambodia, all that stuff. And I said, this is the best job ever. Like, these crazy people, they're paying me to travel around the world. Everything I own fit in a hockey bag. I didn't have a wife or a mortgage or anything. It was like the perfect job. I was going to work my whole life there. No problem. And then they sent me to Spokane to do a 3-month TDY, temporary duty assignment. So every couple of years, like, go back to the U.S., pick any city you want in America, and we're going to give you a list of, you know, wealthy, sweet little old ladies and men, and take them to lunch and tell them stories about how you work with Mother Teresa, and they write a big check to CRS. And if you work overseas, you do not want to do this.
Right.
You want to stay
overseas.
You want
to be, yeah, in
and
the
so
action.
And so eventually I was like, fine. And I talked to a Jesuit friend of mine in where I went to school at Fairfield, and he said, oh, you got to go to Spokane. It's the best public golf courses of anywhere in America, and I love golf. This was 1998, 9, I don't know, something in there. And this was before Google. And so I'm like, Spokane, like, that's probably like right next to Seattle, like totally cool. And I did not realize it was 4 hours away. But I came here, it was supposed to be 3 months. And I met my now wife, and that was 25 years ago. I never left.
Love found a way.
I tell you, it's, you know, it's, I never thought I'd live my whole life in Spokane. Having lived all over the world and grown up in New York City. But this is such a great community. It's grown on me tremendously. You know, still no good pizza here, except, you know, there's a couple. David's is really good. You know.
Nice.
Yeah, but it's a great place to live. It's a great place to raise kids. The community here is very compassionate and generous and loving, despite the 1 out of 10 in the grocery store. The other 9 are rock stars.
Yep.
And that's Spokane.
And we get to do big things here.
Yeah.
I know it. Rob, I'm so happy that you made it to Spokane. I'm glad you found love. And, I don't know what the next, you know, iteration of Catholic Charities will be like, but, you know, you at the helm, it's awesome. Like, you see the need, you feel the need, you have a team of experts just making magic happen. If our listeners wanted to, like, find out more about the different programs, how could they find out?
Yeah, you know, I would encourage anyone listening, you know, take a look at all the nonprofits in Spokane, not just Catholic Charities. There's so many great ones, SNAP and VOA and Salvation Army and Revive and CAT. I mean, these are folks doing great work, you know, and go volunteer. You know, the best way to demystify poverty and to go after the people that are criminalizing and vilifying the poor is to go have an experience yourself, volunteer somewhere. And then when you're at that next barbecue and there's someone on the corner going, oh, those people, they're all lazy. They don't deserve any help at all. You can kind of say, hey, let me tell you, I served lunch at Crosswalk and I did not have that experience at all. of what you're talking about. And you change people's hearts and minds one person at a time.
You just brought back a memory for me, because that's what essentially happened to me. I had probably was 19, 20, and one of my mentors like brought me to House of Charity. We slept a night there.
Yeah, we used to do urban plunges.
Yeah, urban plunges.
We still do them.
Okay, well, I got to do that, and I ended up, you know, talking to a number of different people, and it was demystifying what homelessness looked like, and they're just people. And I may have been scared prior, but then as I started to connect, I'm like, man, you sound a lot like me.
Well,
just with some different paths.
It's humanity. Like I take donors, big donors, top end donors. I'll take them and their family, and we'll serve lunch at House of Charity. I do this all the time. And the week before I'm going to meet them there, I'll get a call from mom or dad every time. Are you sure this is okay? Like, is this going to be safe? Like, this is like, are my kids going to be safe here? Am I going to be safe there? Like, they have this crazy vision of weapons and drugs and violence and all these awful things. And then they get there and they serve lunch. And for an hour straight, 500 guys come through that line, and women, and say, thank you, God bless you, as they get lunch from these people. And they leave that experience going, oh my God, that's the exact opposite of what my mental picture was before I came in here. But now those people are changed forever. The next time they're at a barbecue or a cocktail party, they'll be like, actually, no, I served lunch. I ran into the toughest of the tough crowd, and they were nothing but kind and thankful and gentle. And are there spicy moments? Of course.
Yeah.
Does someone have a bad day? Absolutely. Does someone have an episode? Absolutely. But you'd be amazed that people kind of understand that differently once they have a genuine experience, a human experience, right? And you can't get that by going on Facebook or reading the paper or watching the news. You're going to have to go, as Pope Francis says, you know, go into the streets and come back smelling like the sheep. That's what a shepherd does. And until you do that and have some kind of actual experience with people who are struggling with poverty or homelessness or addiction or mental health, it's going to scare you, because the unknown is going to scare you. Once you have that experience, you can be like, hey, I got that.
Yeah.
Like that could have been my brother or my sister or my nephew. It could have been me.
Me. You heard it here, everyone. Like, accept this challenge. Go volunteer. Connect with the organizations that Rob's talking about. Connect with Catholic Charities. Rob, thanks for joining us today. What an awesome conversation.
Thanks for having me.
You're the man.
I never met a microphone I didn't like.
Are you my cousin?
No. Thanks.